Welcome to Stateside. I'm April Baer. Today, the operator of one of Michigan's big haunted house attractions talks about getting that old Halloween feeling in pandemic times. But first, it's time to round up the week's news. It is possible that the team here at Stateside has been a bit lax in bringing you these analyses on Fridays, simply because it's felt so impossible to encapsulate a week of 2020 news in one segment. But TGIF, and here we are today, with John Selleck of Harbor Strategic Public Affairs to talk about the news. Also, Nancy Kaffer, a columnist at the Detroit Free Press. John, Nancy, welcome.
Thanks, April. Hello.
I think if we were going to encapsulate it in just a quick second, one of us would just scream for about 15 seconds.
This week, bond hearings were held for the 13 accused conspirators in what prosecutors are calling the terrorist plot to kidnap Governor Whitmer and take over the state capitol. Now, there's plenty to say about the investigation, the suspects, Michigan's many militias, but I'm still sitting with the fact that this happened. Have either of you been able to get your head around this?
I have not. It is surreal, and yet at the same time, sort of the inevitable conclusion of a lot of the rhetoric we've been hearing. But it is, you know, it is on a very human and personal level. This is horrific beyond anything I really feel like I have the capacity to deal with.
Yeah. John, how about you?
Yeah, you know, I thought, I said to somebody earlier this week, it's completely and utterly shocking, yet somehow not totally surprising. And that's a scary thing about where we're at in 2020, just sitting down and trying to explain to my kids what this meant and what was going to happen. They saw the headline about the governor, you know, in that crazy fantasy being taken out into the middle of the lake and being left there. It's just unthinkable. But these elements of our society have been there, like has been covered this week in the news, and they certainly have come to the fore this fall.
Nancy, you did a column this week about how misogyny plays into anti-Whitmer sentiment. Do you really think that this would not have happened with a male governor?
Well, it hasn't. So, you know.
Well, there was a moment when the alleged conspirators were considering moving against Virginia's governor.
And they didn't.
Right.
They dropped that plan and turned to Whitmer. No, I think that there is a level of rhetoric that gets applied to female elected leaders that men aren't subject to. You know, people who have talked about her dress as opposed to her policy at the first state of the state, you know, the state Senate majority leader and House speaker calling her emotional and, you know, calling her a dictator, implying that her decisions are emotional rather than rational, which is a way that women are criticized and that men normally are not criticized, is we're depicted as making illogical, irrational choices, whereas men's decisions are presented as the product of logic. And you know, we had Rick Snyder as the governor installed emergency managers in cities all over the state, which, you know, subverts democratic leadership. It subverts lawfully elected officials and puts a emergency manager in place who has absolute control over the city right now. And he never got this kind of pushback. I mean, he got protests, he got all kinds of criticism, but this level of vitriol directed toward a governor who's trying to deal with a public health crisis, there's just no comparison between the response to different governors we've had here in our state in the last few years.
There's no debating over it that sexism still exists as a problem. In Michigan, it's a problem in both parties, as Nancy pointed out in her column. So it's there, it's a problem. It's hurting Republicans far worse than hurting Democrats, obviously, because Republicans essentially just ceded the suburbs, state house seats that were gonna be Republican forever 5 years ago, are now walking out the door. And the majority of the House and a lot of other policy decisions that get made, including what happens in the last 2 years of Governor Whitmer's administration in her first term, are going to get decided in part because of the sexism that pushed Republican women in the suburbs away from the party.
Do you see the revelation of this plot as being an irrevocable blow to the middle in Michigan and maybe even colder relations between Michigan's executive and Republican leadership?
Well, it's clear that the relationships in Lansing are really complex, because what we've seen happen more than once is that they will tear each other to shreds in public. But when it comes down to having to get deals done and get things done, they're still making deals behind the scenes. So we'll have to take a cold comfort in that. The deals they came up with this week, the deals they came up with prior on the budget without having a fight or a shutdown, those things happen. But far more importantly is their ability to keep doing that behind the scenes gets limited the more their public-facing relationship is a disaster. And frankly, right now, there doesn't seem to be a place for coming together on this. I think there's a lot of the public is against all the stuff that happened this week. But we saw even what happened on the day that it got announced. Governor Whitmer, to her credit, is a really strong political actor. She does not hold or store her capital. She identifies it and she spends it. So she decided that day, I think she missed an opportunity to pull things together a little bit more on the unity front. And she instantly turned into a fight with President Trump. Not that she didn't have a point, but by the end of the night, when I watched the news at 11 o'clock, it was a he said, she said, Twitter fight. So I think... Well, I think both sides had to do a better job. If we're going to find common ground and unity, the Detroit Free Press polling today showed us a gap there where there is room to find some common ground. That 63% of the people who answered the poll said they agreed with the new healthcare orders that had to do with masks and things like that, but only at 43% really wanted the Supreme Court decision turned on its ear, which means there's a gap between being okay with the healthcare measure she's taking and the bigger overall control without consulting with the legislature. That means there is sort of a middle there and there's some ground to work with, but no one's doing a very good job of listening to each other right now, and that's not going to improve before the election.
We got to move on, guys. Nancy's colleague Todd Spangler at the Free Press did an article this week about core Trump voters who told him that, you know, possibly suggesting, you know, a political future for the Republican Party, who said there's never going to be another candidate, another president like Donald J. Trump. I wonder if you think that's true. John, do you want to start out?
I'm sure a lot of people hope it's true. And I think just on the surface, it's obvious that it's true. President Trump's endorsements of other candidates, including ones I've worked for, don't stick with other people because they're not him. And there's been one person like him that's been able to stir this pot. And there will be people who try to imitate him. Trumpism will not be dead after this election, regardless of who wins or loses. But the ability for somebody to emulate or look or sound just like that is not going to happen.
Is it possible that the legacy of Donald Trump just goes beyond even what happens with this election, but how both parties react to the changed climate in Washington after this?
I think so. I mean, there's no doubt that he's pushed every single boundary and attempted to undermine or weaken every institution that we thought we were going by. But in some ways, I think it's the emperor wears no clothes for a lot of analysts like myself, even reading articles in Politico about Detroiters who sat there and said, you know what, it doesn't really matter who the president is. It's not going to change my life. People are already so cynical about the ability or the willingness of any president to do what they say they're going to do. That already existed, and Trump seemed to have just taken that as fact and then ran with it.
You know, I think that, you know, John makes a good point. Even we see now this sort of idea that none of the traditional rules apply to Trump still only applies to Trump. We see other candidates still taking penalty for the same sort of stuff that just doesn't matter for him, financial problems or saying things that are outrageous or gaffes or, you know, outright awful. So, I mean, I don't know that we're going to see a new sort of politics where anyone can behave like that. I think the bigger question about whether or not, as long as you make good on things like a conservative judiciary and tax cuts, is going to really rest a lot on the type of Republican that John is most connected to, which is a more traditional, respectable mainstream Republican as opposed to the Trump-based Republican. Whether or not that type of Republican will endorse Trump for his results as opposed to his rhetoric, whether they'll decide that balance works out, I think is really the burden is on that particular group of Republican voters. This is really very much uncharted territory.
It just feels like there's so many families right now that aren't talking to each other about politics. I want to ask both of you how Michigan walks back from this political edge right now. Where do we go from here after Election Day? Nancy?
Gee, ask a hard question next time, April. You know, people talk a lot about civility, but I think the thing that we have let fall away is empathy. Civility can be important. But I think it's that actual beyond the veneer of politeness. It's that ability to actually walk in someone else's shoes, or you know, metaphorically walk in someone else's shoes, and understand their challenges. And we have, just as our culture, started to redefine why I don't have to care about things, because this group of people doesn't look like me. They don't live by me. They don't share my values. They don't go to school with my kids. They don't shop at my store. It seems like we almost look for reasons to exclude others from our sort of orbit of care. And I don't know how we start walking that back, other than if each of us intentionally decides to do better at understanding what our neighbors, or our, even if there are distant neighbors, even if they don't look like us or worship like us, do. And I think that's as much of a challenge for people like me, who are trying to understand why, you know, the folks who admiringly say there'll never be another one like him, they're people also. And I have to admit, at times my empathy for people in that position has been thin, and that's something I have to work on. I hope that they'll work on it too.
John, I know the path forward has been a big topic in Republican circles. What's on your mind about this?
First of all, I want to win Nancy's empathy. That's where I always start from.
Never, Selleck, never.
I agree with her greatly on that front, and that the ability for people to have empathy for each other seems to be more and more limited. And part of that we have to take into consideration is that the psychological effects of COVID and what it did to where we were already at was terrible. It was just like adding a big batch of poison to an already dangerous brew. I'm hopeful there is a desire amongst humans to connect with each other for real.
John Selleck of Harbor Strategic Public Affairs. We've also been talking with Nancy Kaffer, columnist at the Detroit Free Press. Guys, get some rest this weekend, okay?
Thanks, April.
Still to come on the program, a couple of artists collaborate on trying to figure out what live performance can look like in the age of physical distance. That's next on Stateside.